Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? You are listening to the first ever NYK Exchange podcast presented by NYKinformation.com. This, like I said, this is the first ever show. My name is Sean Aquino. I'm on with my good buddy, Chris Delgado. Chris, how you doing?
Good, Sean. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for coming on tonight. Everybody who's listening in, this is it's a new endeavor. Leon Jacobson, he's an Australian Knicks fan. He put together this site, nykinformation.com, with the sole purpose of getting fans together to share information, share theories, share statistics on the New York Knicks. And a podcast was a good part, a good piece of that in terms of getting the community together. As you know, I just mentioned Leon from Australia. We're doing the show. Chris is in New York. I'm in L.A. So it's kind of a worldwide endeavor. We have Knicks fans all over the world. And this is a pretty, pretty important time in New York Knicks history. We're now going into Phil Jackson's third year, Jeff Hornacek's first year. That's something I never thought I would ever hear, that Jeff Hornacek would be the head coach of the New York Knicks, working for Phil Jackson. After everything we've heard over the past couple of years and Phil Jackson's small inner circle of triangle disciples, and you know, and now look what happened. Jeff Hornacek, I mean, the contract hasn't been finalized yet, but Jeff Hornacek will probably be the next head coach of the New York Knicks. So I'm going to start with that, Chris. What were your thoughts when you saw Howard Beck's tweet that Hornacek is going to be the new coach?
I will be honest, it was a disappointment. And that's nothing against Jeff Hornacek at the moment. It's more about, I think I probably had a preference for Vogel having, you know, with his body of work being the most that I've seen in the NBA. You know, David Blatt was here for 1 year, and obviously he had some troubles with the locker room. Not that I don't think David Blatt is not a fine coach, but those questions remained. And Frank Vogel, somebody that I've watched and admired. So from that sense, it was disappointing. Now, the more that I, you know, learned about Jeff Hornacek's coaching style, I could see where it aligned with what Phil wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I felt the same with you. Frank Vogel was my first choice. I remember logging in for the Larry Bird press conference. I was like, are they really going to let Frank Vogel go? And when they did, I actually started comparing him to Tom Thibodeau in the sense of he actually has been to more Eastern Conference Finals than Tom Thibodeau. I think he's actually been able to do more than Tom Thibodeau in the sense of the roster and the talent that's on there to help, you know, Roy Hibbert have a great, you know, career year. Ian Mahimi, Lance Stevenson, all these guys had their best years under Vogel, while Thibodeau had a roster that had several stars on it repeatedly, though, yes, Derrick Rose was out for a couple of years. So I thought Vogel was actually, you know, probably better suited for Thibodeau, especially with the whole history between Tibbs and MSG. So I thought Vogel was going to be, and then, of course, Vogel's connected to Brian Shaw to me, and him being a former scout for the Lakers in 2004, I thought it was all lining up perfectly. So I was expecting to see that. And then after a couple of days where I guess the interview occurred, I think last Friday or so, about a week ago, and then we didn't hear anything about Vogel for 3 or 4 days, and then we heard that Phil Jackson interviewed Hornacek, I think it was on maybe Sunday, in L.A., and I thought to myself, if they were sold on Vogel, why are they now meeting with Hornacek? So that's kind of when I started getting a little bit concerned about it, because I thought, I really didn't get it. I thought maybe this was a smokescreen. Maybe the media was right. Maybe Phil Jackson is just interviewing people to make it seem like he did his job, but at the end of the day, he's going to hire Kurt Rambis or keep Kurt Rambis. So it was completely shocking to me. And like you said, I started studying different tapes, you know, B-ball breakdown, different analysis from Phoenix Suns fans online, and I started to read about his system. And it was a pretty modern system. And it's not the type of system that you would consider, you know, post or mid-post elbow action focused. But it's a system where they did share the ball. There was ball movement. It wasn't like a 1-5 pick and roll consistently time and time again. And that's what I kind of found exciting about it, that Phil Jackson is kind of, obviously he's opened up his worldview. So my next question for you is, are you expecting a hybrid system, kind of like what Golden State runs, or are you expecting Hornacek to learn the triangle and for Phil and Randis to be the teachers, or what do you expect Jeff Hornacek to do offensively just from what we've learned of him over the past week?
Well, a few things. I have to say where I probably learned the most was the Grantland interview that he did a few years back. In combination with, you know, just reading some of the other pieces, I think it sounded like Jeff played to his personnel in Phoenix.
Right.
And that we haven't heard the press conference yet, and there's been a lot of speculation that hiring Jeff Hornacek means that this is the end of the triangle. I'm not so sure about that. There was an article written in the New York Times about Jeff Hornacek's connection to the triangle, having knowing it and playing in it. So I think it's more about, and people are so focused on triangle, like it isn't used throughout the league in different forms. But I think it's more about basketball philosophies and where they align. And reading that interview in Grantland, it really sounded like what Jeff was saying aligned with the stuff that we heard Phil Jackson say that he wanted as a coach. Now, to take it even a step further, if you read back, that the Knicks, you know, openly talked with, it was even Derek Fisher, Derek Fisher, Phil Jackson both talked about they needed to get into their offense faster. They needed to get more easy buckets and such. That was a goal of theirs. And this is something that Jeff Hornacek did, granted with the personnel that he had, very well in Phoenix. But I'm not sold yet. I'm going to wait to hear because, you know, Pat Riley's the perfect example. Everybody thought he was going to come here and be Showtime. And then he's got to the press conference and he said, you know what? No, we're going to play around the personnel that we have. And there's been – you know, if you read some of the stuff out there about Jeff, it sounds like that's the type of coach he is, that he plays to his personnel. But I'm sure we'll find out in the next few days.
Yeah, I'm sure the press conference, I've heard, I guess Ian Begley's been reporting early next week. But, you know, what I'm hoping for is, I was kind of torn. Before Phil Jackson came in, I thought to myself, Carmelo Anthony is a player that has proven to be better at the power forward position in the sense of the Knicks winning 54 games and, you know, really, it really worked for him at the four. And I thought, okay, that's where we need to move with Carmelo. And then the triangle came in, and I was all about trusting Phil Jackson. And to me, it kind of came down to, I truly don't think that Derek Fisher was a tactician. And I think that he was in over his head in the sense of, you know, not only with the whole timeout situation or, you know, what place a call after timeouts, but in terms of setting up game plans or in terms of teaching the system or being able to come up with creative sets out of the system, there was, I think, a tactical part that I see that I thought really lacked from Derek Fisher's approach. And to me, it was kind of like a computer application where it's like Derek Fisher was teaching the out of the box triangle offense. You know what I mean? As opposed to a triangle offense that was modernized or, you know, kind of suited for today's game, I thought. And so what I'm thinking here is that what Phil Jackson sees in Jeff Hornacek is a skilled tactician, a guy that does have great plays out of timeout, the guy who's been able to take a team that won 25 wins and then make the team win 48 wins the year after and really run a high-octane offense geared around those three point guards. So that, to me, is, I think, where we're going to see the big difference between Fisher and Rambis and Hornacek. To me, it's the tactical part. And I can't help but think that I've heard that Steve Kerr was looking at Jeff Hornacek as a replacement for his associate head coach for Luke Walton. And it really, I mean, thinking how this went back, we all know Phil contacted Walton first, and it seemed like Walton told him, you know what, if LA is available, I'm going to go there, because guess what? A couple days later, Byron Scott was fired. And then suddenly, quickly, the Lakers scooped up on Walton. And it wouldn't surprise me if somewhere in that time frame, Phil and Kerr had a conversation about that. And you know what? Kerr may have talked to Phil and said, you know what? The number one guy that I'm going to look at is Steve Kerr. Is Jeff Hornacek. Because I really find it extremely hard to believe that in day one, when Phil Jackson was set to hire Steve Kerr, that Steve Kerr was going to do exactly what Derek Fisher did in the sense of the out-of-the-box triangle offense. I believe that Steve Kerr was going to come in and kind of run a hybrid system, a system of basketball, the system of basketball that Phil talks about all the time, not just the pure triangle. And therefore, I think that Phil Jackson was hoping Derek Fisher could do the same thing, but tactically, I believe he felt short. And then I believe now that this is proving that Phil Jackson is actually was always all about the system and not just the pure triangle by picking the best tactical coach he could find in Jeff Hornacek. What do you think about that theory?
It's quite possible. I've thought to myself that Steve Kerr has played a role in this. It hasn't been confirmed yet. It's been rumored, I think. I didn't listen to Hahn and Humphrey the other day, but I heard that maybe Alan Hahn alluded to something like that on the radio, not as a report or anything. But it was one of the things I thought about. It was one of the things I thought about. And obviously, they talk, and it was reported that Jeff Hornacek was in the running for that Golden State job. They might have said, hey, Phil, you know what? Take a look. And it's not like it's anybody that Phil doesn't know. You know, people act like Phil hasn't been in the NBA for 50 years. Jeff Hornacek's been in the NBA for what, 30? I believe Bondi of the News reported that, Hornacek was a player that Phil coveted back in the day. It's not like these guys are just like strangers. And Phil said, hey, you know, it's people get caught up. I think people get caught up in the daily noise, if you will.
Right. Well, I mean, I have a tendency to get caught up in it, and I get torn time and time again. You know, for me being in LA, it's, you know, Twitter has opened up the world to the fan base. I had absolutely no idea. I always knew we were a passionate fan base, but now I feel like I'm really like I'm walking down the street and I'm in a subway with you guys, and I could just listen in and let my, you know, thoughts be heard. That's what Twitter has essentially allowed us to do, which is really, really cool. But at the same time, man, I don't know if I want to read the Post and the Daily News every day. It's scary.
Here's the difference. They talk about how Twitter's the new sports radio. Well, you know what? Sports radio used to get those calls vetted. There is nobody vetting the tweets. I mean, I guess you are, if you will, but you know, who knows what somebody retweets, if you will. So exposed to a whole lot of stuff, and you can see how, you know, daily how people are influenced and stuff that they believe, you know. And there's other people that just believe what they want, even if, you know, the reports say otherwise. So, you know, it's really not much you could do. I do take solace in finding people on there though who do enjoy, who are rational, you know. And there's plenty of that.
Right.
I would say the majority of that, they're just not always the most vocal.
There's definitely plenty of that. I mean, I could name 5 to 10 guys, and you know, I'm like, man, if I'm running a team, it's pretty funny that I'll be like, I'll pick these 5 guys. I'll call them in and say, do you guys want to be a part of my staff or something? I mean, there are a lot of extremely knowledgeable Knicks fans out there that understand the importance of, you know, a modern NBA, or, you know, not just using the analytics, but they understand the game. They watch tape. They're open, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I think is most important. If you have there's no doubt in my mind, if we look, you know, at the job that Phil Jackson is doing and just say, okay, this has been a measured approach. It's been an approach that has been focused on the long term, and it's been an approach that has been, you know, it's allowing us to keep our assets, which is a complete change from what the past 15 years has been like. And that is a refreshing thing, and it's a positive thing. And then so you have this thought process, which is consistently clashing with the other thought process of, but he hasn't done anything yet. It's been 2 years, and he hasn't done anything yet. It doesn't matter, right? None of this stuff matters. Like the fact that we now have all of our first-round picks and we have a top-5 talent for the next 15 years without giving anything up, really, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Where before we have to mortgage our entire roster for Carmelo Anthony. Now we have a kid who's 20 years old who we basically own forever if we want and if we build a good team around him. And, you know, and so how do you, or, you know, how do you see that clash daily? You know, what is your thought process on that when you see
first
that?
First of all, that in itself, you know, drafting a Kristaps Porzingis is more success than most GMs have in their career. If, you know, assuming that he continues along his trajectory, you know, I'll put that in there. So, you know, and, it, you know, there was a talk on, there's a conversation with some Knicks fans on Twitter today. Phil could walk away, and I've been saying this, Phil could walk away tomorrow, and he's left the franchise in the best, you know, best position it's been since, what, the mid-90s? As far as,
right.
You know, if, I can't remember, and this, people used to always give me stuff like, oh, why do you believe in Phil? Why do you believe in Phil? Like, you know, during this time, it's hard to argue with fiscal responsibility, something the Knicks have never had. You know, keeping their draft picks, acquiring young talent. And I think a big part of it has been this perception that they're not. Because one day, Stan Van Gundy, who happens to be the brother of Jeff Van Gundy, if you didn't know, who happens to be, guess what, one of Phil's biggest arch rivals throughout his career, not to say that they're not, you know, it's well documented. So when he says, oh, I don't know what they're talking about when they're rebuilding, when they have, you know, all these guys that are close to 30. Well, they had four starters, and the rest of the team was 24 years old or younger. You know, their number two guy, sometimes number one on some nights, was 20 years old.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, right.
And when you put that with a coach trying to find his way through, like you were talking about earlier, you know, there's going to be nights where it doesn't fire on any cylinders, and you have 9-game losing streaks, and then you add Lance Thomas injuries and such, and they get worse defensively. So I don't know if people think about that when they look at the big picture. Well, as I was just saying, I don't think people look at the big picture when they're focused on stuff like that or not realizing stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if all things go well, you could see Jerry and Grant was a highly touted player, and you could see he was being forced to do something that he wasn't used to doing in his 4 years at Notre Dame. You know, I mean, what last season with the triangle. But you could see when he's running pick and roll, that's where Grant is most comfortable. And he's a 6'5 guard that could take contact, finish in traffic. Obviously, he needs to work on his outside jump shot. He's shown defensively that, of course, he's got a ways to go, but the potential is definitely there. And it's kind of odd that you could look back in 5 years and say that the Knicks drafted their starting point guard and an all-star in Porzingis in one draft. And Hernan Gomez, who, if he was to come out this year, would have been a first-round pick. You know, we drafted him last year. So you're talking about players, three rotation players, not much. And plus, Langston Galloway, I know people are really hard on him because the fan base sometimes says, well, if you're not a starter, you're not good enough. But I'm sorry, but if you're a seventh or eighth guy on a team or a third or fourth guard, and I think that's what Galloway is, for basically nothing, being undrafted and developing through your summer league, that is a positive. Getting Lance Thomas for J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert and that cap space, and then Lance Thomas coming into his own. Lance Thomas is going to get $7-8 million on the market this summer, and we can retain him as such.
Phil or Derek Fisher for whoever you want to say got Lance paid.
Right.
I mean, and Lance himself, because I heard he'd really dedicated himself in the offseason.
Oh, true, yeah. And he'd worked on his jump shot. But, I mean, he's a guy that could play the three and the four, guard three different positions, and I hope the Knicks keep him. So my point is that too much is said on, okay, so you're looking at that, and people would rather say, well, we didn't get LaMarcus Aldridge. So basically the first summer that Phil had, we had no cap space because Amari and Bargnani were still there. And then the second summer, we were a 17-win team. And why, what is it about some fans that say, even though we're a 17-win team, we're the Knicks, and we're Phil Jackson, and therefore, if he didn't get LaMarcus Aldridge or DeAndre Jordan, he is a failure. How do people make that connection?
But, Here's what I said. A lot of people like want to reference the record, or they combine the record. And let's take it one year at a time. And I think we just kind of alluded to what happened last season. And let me just say that nobody wanted that. But year one, that was a little bit different. And I always say like, oh, they're like 65 loss season, worse than Knicks history. Phil Jackson sucks. I'm like, okay, right. You want to give back Chris Kristaps Porzingis? They really should have had Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know who to blame for that. I kind of ultimately blame Phil Jackson for not putting down the hammer. But winning two out of those three games was incredibly foolish. I don't know what Derek Fisher was trying to prove. Or you want to blame Tim Hardaway for being the hero that one night, whatever the case may be. But regardless, do you want to give those losses back? And, give back Kristaps Porzingis. And you can have an 8-seed first round elimination. How about that? Which one would you prefer? Which one do you proceed to complain about it, but which one would you rather have today, looking back?
And that's exactly right. I mean, when you're building a team for the future, I remember in the introductory press conference, Phil said, the cachet that brought me here is changing the culture, right? So it's changing the culture, and they asked him about, what's the time frame for winning a championship? And he said, well, you know what, that's a long ways away. If I'm even able to do that, it would be a great way to cap off my career, but this is a process step by step. So he said, those are his words. How does it get then become, like Stephen A. Smith and others, I thought Phil Jackson was going to come in with his 11 rings, put them on the table, and get LeBron James and Kevin Durant. And these guys were supposed to come here because they're Phil Jackson. Did Phil Jackson ever say that? Why are these fans putting that out there?
But that's what we all assumed. That's what I assumed. Everybody thought that that people would be star elite players would be attracted to the rings like flies to a light. And that's not the case. And, so much has changed about the NBA. I don't think, and the world for that matter, that I don't think that people realize that this is not the same. This is not an attractive destination as it might've been once upon a time for reasons that have nothing to do with basketball. And that's the tax code. At the end of the day, it's about money. Teams in Florida and Texas have distinct advantages, not having a state tax. So starting right there, and then you get into other things where you can be a major athlete in a city like Oklahoma City, and you can even survive with another major athlete there. Just to show you that the NBA world has become flat. So players don't need New York like they used to. It used to be like cats want to be like, yeah, I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to get my shine. People are going to see what I could do now. I'm tired of being on this bad team. Like, no. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, with the Knicks have not had a culture. They haven't been good. There's an intense scrutiny. There's a lot of, unfairness. I would say that the New York sports culture is you owe me. That's across the board, regardless of sport. So, and so when Phil came in, he said that we're going to have to start a talent. I remember this clearly. He said we're going to have to start a talent search, and we don't have a lot of assets, so we're going to have to find things, whether it's players at the end of benches, Shane Larkin, whether it's guys that haven't been drafted, Langston Galloway. Some of these guys might be here in the part of the future, but even the guys that Phil had, you can't say, and with everybody that's been on the team that he inherited, you can't say that Phil didn't evaluate these guys before letting them go. And not to say that he hasn't made mistakes. There's been Sam Dallenberg.
Oh, sure.
Right. For instance.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. But the big things have been the major thing to me has been the Derek Fisher thing. I guess if there's the one negative, the one real bad move was the Derek Fisher, signing. But I think he gave him, for whatever reason, there was a communication breakdown. There was either Fisher did ignore Phil, and Phil allowed that to happen because he wanted to give him autonomy, and then he let him make his own bed, which is, there are leadership philosophies that are about that, where, you're going to say something a couple times to your employee, and you're going to let your employee take your advice and do what they're going to do, or ignore your advice and do what they're going to do and suffer the consequences, right? And if Phil Jackson's sending, you know, post-game notes to Derek Fisher every night and they go largely ignored, and there's no communication, and the team goes 1-9 suddenly, and around a scandal where you might be, you know, tweeting people on Instagram or whatever the hell you might be doing, and those two things coincide together, you know what? You have no one to blame but yourself for the fact that you've lost your job. So that's what, I mean, from my perspective, I had no problem with him letting go of Fisher in that sense, because I never really saw the tactical growth. I thought that, yeah, he incorporated a little bit more of the pick and roll in the first 40-something games of the season, but I don't know if that's really the reason why they won. I think the reason they started out as a 500 team was, yeah, they ran a little bit more pick and roll, but truly it's because Porzingis was a hell of a lot better than anybody thought, and because Robin Lopez is a really good basketball player. And people, you know, downgrade and demean Robin Lopez, but this guy's been a winner pretty much everywhere he goes. So I thought that was really more of where the Knicks got better. And I thought Derek Fisher, for whatever reason, just couldn't tactically get things right. But that's just my viewpoint.
Phil was said that he mentioned, they asked Phil when he was the first time he considered letting Derek go, and he mentioned that Nets game that came right after the winning streak. And I remember going into that game, like, I was so surprised actually we lost that game. That was one of the games this year I missed. But I was fully confident that the way we were rolling, that we should win,
yeah.
Should have won that game, or would win that game,
right.
Regardless of who playing, especially with how bad that the Nets were.
Yeah.
But I do give Derek Fisher credit for honestly, I mean, I think in games like San Antonio, I think the Knicks were a lot better than anybody expected at the beginning of the season. And, Derek Fisher does get credit for that. But, I guess at the end of the day, none of us are in the building. None of us are in the locker room.
Sure.
You know, even the people whose job it is to report, I have to rely on other people for other information as we see. So, ultimately we'll never know. Because for all we know, Derek might have gotten let go for his personal stuff off the thing. And, Phil didn't want to, say it was that. So Derek doesn't become, even though he did become it. But, Derek doesn't become this guy who got fired from his job for being shady.
Right.
So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. But what you have to give credit to is that Phil pulls the plug. He pulled the plug at Dallenberg earlier. He pulled the plug on Shumpert. He pulled the plug on JR. He pulled the plug in that season, tanked, and got Kristaps. He pulled the plug in Derek Fisher, gets to remain of what Hornacek becomes. People lost their minds because of Kurt Rambis. You know what? It was a half a season that at the end of the day, if the Knicks are successful from this point going forward, do you really care that Kurt Rambis, coached the last half of the season when the Knicks were pretty much, really not as good as the other teams that were contending for that last season?
Yeah, definitely. Good points. I want to remind everybody, you guys are listening to the NYK Exchange podcast with Chris Delgado and Sean Aquino, presented by NYKinformation.com. You mentioned a little bit ago, we were talking about Phil's introductory press conference and how he talked about culture change. I think one of the things that's a major part of the culture change is a certain style of play. I forget a writer who alluded to it, that it seems like Hornacek's teams had a certain style of play. They had a identity on the basketball court. And if that is what the Knicks are able to gain moving forward, an identity on the basketball floor, a certain style of play where the Knicks share the basketball. That to me seems like that would be a major component of Phil's culture change. And if you look at the two star players, Kristaps Porzingis, he has an opportunity at the five, at the stretch five, of revolutionizing that position in a way no one else ever has. And Carmelo Anthony, we've already been able to see the damage that he's been able to do at the power forward spot, stretching the floor. And if we want to start with Robin Lopez and KP at the four and Melo at the three, there are some sets where you put Carmelo in isolation in the post out of Hornacek's offense. So what, do you see the ability that Porzingis and Carmelo have at the four and the five to become, for the Knicks to have that identity offensively on the floor and to be a part of that culture change, and that the Knicks actually have some tools that can be utilized in the modern NBA a lot more than we could have ever thought of in the triangle. Am I being a little too positive on what Hornacek can bring tactically with this? But that's what I'm hoping for.
It remains to be seen what the philosophy would be. Obviously, it makes sense to develop it around your two top players like Kristaps and Melo. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's still going to be a few more years before you can expect Kristaps to be the everyday center. You know, we saw how he kind of had some trouble the second half of last year. He's still, you know, he's put on weight, but he's still very frail. He needs to get much stronger in the lower body. But, you know, when he's 24, he can't dominate this league as 24, 25. He can't dominate this league as a center, just like you were talking about. In the interim, I do think you need a Robin Lopez, or, you know, there's even talk of, you know, Dwight Howard coming to New York. I'm not co-signing. I'm just saying that, you know, I would say somebody down there to do to keep bodies off of Porzingis, because you do need him on offense.
Right, totally. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Lopez fan. I think that he did wonders next to Marcus Aldridge in Portland. He's a great offensive rebounder. He's a team first guy, one of the best defenders in the league, and I think it's a great pairing. They showed the ability to play together, and I think it's fine. And it gives them the versatility where if KP could play maybe 10, 15 minutes even at the five, you switch Carmelo before. It doesn't have to become a full-time thing, but it could get Porzingis acclimated to being a little bit more versatile out there. And at the end of the day, the Knicks were at least still one of the best shot-blocking teams with that pairing. And the reason I mentioned that is that, you know, the beginning of the culture change thing is that if the Knicks do form an identity, say, in this next year, and they are 500 team or hovering around there, and they start to develop a certain style of play, and Jerry and Grant is looking like a player, and that is what I think Phil's alluding to in terms of building something for the future and creating an environment where free agents are going to want to come to New York, because they're going to see how much better Robin Lopez is playing. They're going to see Porzingis and Carmelo being used to the best of their abilities, and they'll be able to see Jerry and Grant's development in a system like this. And then that's when 2017 comes, and you're looking at, you know, Westbrook, Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, Dennis Schroeder, Jeff Teague, Jrue Holiday, George Hill. I mean, you have like 8 point guards that are going to be available in 2017, and the Knicks might, if they keep a good handle on their cap space and don't necessarily overspend this summer, they might have the ability to spend another $20 to $30 million next year with the cap going up. That to me should be the focus, is maintaining that flexibility, showing what the new system could do so that people want to come back to New York. Do you think that that's what Phil's trying to do as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, and like I said, you know, you never know what every free agent, something, you know, every free agent has a different motive. And David West is the perfect example. And I was reading something the other day about Kevin Martin, who the Knicks were interested in. He wanted to be on a championship contender. So you just don't know what they're doing. But you have to change the culture from the inside out in New York. What I mean by that is, as we talked about earlier, the fans and the media aren't going to really help you to attract free agents here. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to do it with your camaraderie in the locker room, with your winning play on the court, and with, you know, excitement about the holy grail of, you know, winning in New York, if that, you know, could ever. You have to make that a possibility. It has to be a lure to New York, and the Knicks aren't there yet, and they're far from it. But you talk about point guards. You talk about point guards. You know, this is a lot is going to depend on how healthy Tony Roten is, because, you know, you can see Jerry and Grant and Tony Roten playing an attacking style like Hornacek did in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. You can see them playing an attacking style regardless, even if they didn't adapt the offense and what they were doing last year. Now, mm-hmm. obviously those guys hurt you from the perimeter, and how the Knicks or the front office is going to supplement them, I don't know. I do believe this is going to be really unpopular, and people will probably turn the podcast off after I say this, but I do believe that Jose Calderon is going to be back next year, just not as a starter for the entire year, if at all. But I think they value his leadership. I think the players value having him around. I do think they need, they're just saying you can never have enough shooters. They might just let his contract expire as opposed to stretching at this point. So, the point guard thing was something that they needed at the second half of last season. It might not be the hole that they have going forward. The hole that they have going forward really depends on whether or not Aaron Aflalo decides to opt in.
Right. Yeah, I'm imagining he's not. And if he doesn't, Derek Williams is only going to be set to make $4 million. So that's an extra $12 million on top of the $19 million that they already have. So the Knicks will be at about $30 million. And then if you do stretch Jose, that'll get you at $34 million. So if you don't, you're at $30 million, and you have three point guards in the sense of Grant, hopefully Roten gets healthy, and Calderon there. And that kind of shifts the focus to the Knicks, and that's why they've been talking about getting some big guards. I know Evan Turner's been mentioned, Kent Bazemore, Evan Fournier, Alan Crabb. For me, it's about finding players that are young and are going to be able to grow with Porzingis and can shoot the basketball, but also have the ability to learn and be youthful enough to be able to change their style of play so that they could progress. You know, they still have upside ahead of themselves. Out of those four names, anybody there really you think would be a good fit with this roster?
Yeah, and I know it's another name I'm going to get killed for, but if you look at the names that are out there, you talk about upside, it's just not there. I mean, outside of the top elite guys that are not that we presume are not going to come here. There's word that Batum, everybody says Batum is the perfect fit. Batum hasn't had the healthiest of the careers. His agents are already trying to leverage the Knicks for a max contract. It was put out there actually last week that his agent said that, it's believed that the Knicks would offer him a max contract, but he would prefer to stay in Charlotte. Agent 101. So, I think you gotta I looked at that list, and you know who has the highest upside to me is Lance Stephenson. Now, hear me out before you turn the podcast off. Lance was playing at a high level, not too long ago in his career. Obviously, the Charlotte thing's there. I do have concerns about bringing him home to New York. But the guy who's running the organization, though he's not coaching, does have a track record for taking in malcontents and doing the better. To Lance's credit, he played better in Memphis last year. Lance's all-around game and ability to defend make him intriguing, but he can't be make it or
your
bust.
Your big signing.
It's a tangible sign you take a risk at that could have, it's a risk reward type signing that you don't spend a lot of money on, kind of like what we did last year. And then you try to acquire another player that is, or maybe in this case, the interesting thing was brought up today. You said Aaron Aflalo would probably opt out, and I believe he would. And this is what I'm curious about, though, because I wonder if it was clear he had problems with Kurt Rambis. I wonder how he feels now with a new coach, but he might just be, done overall. Who knows? Personally, I'm hoping he leaves. But if he does stay, would an Aaron Aflalo, Lance Stephenson combo, because I think that would be, perfect. I would say maybe a little bit of a less selfish Aaron Aflalo 3-and-D type guy is what I would like to go along with Lance Stephenson. I was just saying, but at the end of the day, though, you look at the makeup of this team, they're going to need shooters. I mean, they need shooters on the court as well. So, This is why I defer to the people who get paid to do it.
I know. It's fun to do this, and I totally trust Bo Jackson. I still do. I know the majority of the moves on terms of the roster have been really good. And who would have thought we would have been able to trade Jerry and Grant for Tim Hardaway? That's just another example. But overall,
Hardaway's killing it in Atlanta. You didn't read that? He killed it for like a whole two days.
Yeah, I remember Berman tweeted, and then I looked at the – he had like 11 points or something, and I was like, 11 points? And he played 40 minutes or something. I was like, okay, man, relax. But, what you have is – for the Knicks, I think what's important is you need that sharpshooter. Alan Crabb is that sharpshooting type guy. Fournier is a 6'7" international player who's probably going to command somewhere in the $15 to $19 million range, but he's only like 24, I think, 23, which – you know, that's intriguing to me. Evan Turner, just not a good enough outside shooter to me. And I think I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do what we need him to do. So Kent Bazemore is a good defender. I like his game. He's a lefty. Another guy like Tyler Johnson from Miami, another lefty who got hurt late in the year for Miami, but he's a tough defender. And he's one of those players that reminds me of one of the old school Knicks, a player that would have fit well in the Miami Knicks. Rivalry. So there are some guys that you know the Knicks are going to look at.
You know who would fit well. He's a restricted free agent, but obviously health is the issue. But if health wasn't, Bradley Beal would be the perfect addition in that backcourt.
He would be perfect. Yeah.
I don't know if you can.
We're not going to take a chance with him. Yeah, it's. I know. I mean, it's pretty sad for Washington. I mean, if you think about it, they. What is it? His ankle every year that he hurts? I don't know, but he can't stay on the court consistently.
Somebody said degenerative ankles. I don't know if that was another fan just making fun of him or if it's an actual condition. I'm not familiar. But if you look at his games missed, you can't go down and put the money that he's going to be expecting or the money that's going to take to get him out of Washington.
Yeah. Well, I think the Knicks have a roster where you have guys like Porzingis and Carmelo, they're going to be able to shoot the three. I think I read that Hornacek in his first year when the Suns went from being number 25 in three-point attempts to number 5. They went from 13.5 points in fast breaks to 19, which was best in the league. And offensive efficiency went from 29 to 8. And what people forget is the year that the Knicks won 54 games. I mean, I think they had a top three offense. And I think they were maybe ranked somewhere in the 15 to 18 range defensively. But they have a top five offense with Carmelo at the four and Tyson Chandler running that pick and roll. I'm not saying we should go back to that completely, but I think we have a front court that is versatile enough that could really do some damage in that way. And I think we're going to see huge growth from Jerry and Grant. I'm not being overly optimistic. I would not be so worried. I would be fine going into the season with Grant, Roten, and Calderon. I just think we need two new shooting guards or a wing, 2-3 hybrid. Solomon Hill is a guy from the Pacers who hasn't been consistent at all, but he's a good defender, and he played well in the playoffs for Indiana. He's another one of those wing players that I think the Knicks should look at. But, yeah, I think a lot of it's going to come down to this this week, and we'll see what happens in the press conference. What is Jeff Hornacek? How is he going to describe his offense? I mean, that's, I think, the major question for me moving forward.
Yeah, and that ties to then, what type of free agents they are looking for. I think that's what kind of like everybody's been focusing on, like, oh, the triangles, what's going to happen with the triangles, what's going to happen with this? And it's more like, well, I'm more concerned with what happens to their free agent philosophy.
Yeah.
Or what, say, how does it affect what they were thinking about doing? Let's face it, it doesn't really, at the end of the day, and I was saying this during the whole coaching search, people were flipping out because it was taking so long. Coaching is not an integral part. It clearly is. But at the end of the day, it's what happens that first week in July that is going to largely determine their success next year. And that's, the front office's ability to upgrade the roster and fill the holes and find the right balance between, these guys.
Right.
But, to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier, you asked me, what I first felt when Jeff Hornacek, when I heard the news. I'm not worried about the Knicks offensively next year. And I think this ties into when I heard that. I was a little disappointed because also I'm kind of concerned defensively.
You know,
Hornacek doesn't have that reputation as a defensive coach. I would assume that he knew that because he brought in one of Tom Thibodeau's disciples to be his assistant coach in Phoenix. That assistant coach is no longer available because he just got hired by the Cleveland Cavaliers earlier this year. So I'm curious to see who they'll be bringing in to run the defense or how that's going to work as well. But that's also my concern of the team. But I have no, with the type of players that they have, Kristaps Porzingis, Carmelo Anthony, I have no concerns that they're going to be good offensively. You know, at the end of the day, how good defensively are they going to be?
Yeah, that is the key. That was probably my major concern as well. I mean, Frank Vogel, you know, with Frank Vogel, the Knicks would have been a top 10 defensive team last year and or next year if he would have been our head coach. I don't see any other way around that.
I mean, who's to say? I mean, he's done, you know, what he has the track record. But I would assume I would assume that his struggles on offense hurt him. And that's something that, you know, when you hear, you know, you hear what Phil preaches and you read that Grantland interview from Jeff Hornacek a couple of years ago, it's simpatico to use a buzzword from these last few months. You know, what's the knock on Frank Vogel? He struggles with spacing. Well, guess what? That's a big problem for Phil Jackson, I would assume, based off the way that Phil talks. So I'm not to say that what I'm sure Phil doesn't have great respect for Vogel, but at the end of the day, he's like, as we spoke about, and we'll see what that system that is, but he probably believes in Jeff Hornacek's ability to run a system of basketball.
Right. Yeah. And I remember him, Phil Jackson, he was quoted in a piece being a big believer in, or not a big believer, but a fan of the way the Atlanta Hawks and San Antonio Spurs played. And there's definitely a system of offense, but most of it is predicated off of the pick and roll. But it's definitely a system of offense. And that gets me back to the Steve Kerr hire. I really believe that Phil Jackson was going to let Steve Kerr run what he wanted to run. And just Jeff Hornacek hire is just another reflection of that. One of the things that Steve Kerr also did, which I think was brilliant, and was hiring Ron Adams, who I'm sure you'd recognize his name, a longtime defensive guru. So I think as long as Hornacek is able to build a staff around him, and I think Hornacek is a smart enough basketball guy to know what his weaknesses are. And if he was able to hire a Thibodeau disciple in Long Lombardi, I think that's his name, I'm sure he's going to try to find another guy to flank him on that bench that can teach defense. And I think that is a difference. I think that was very underrated with what Steve Kerr did in Golden State. He built like an all-star coaching staff around him, young and old, and I think that's why they were able to do so. Of course, the roster is tremendous, but defensively,
Alvin Gentry. I mean, he had Alvin Gentry.
Right?
Is basically his like 1A.
Right.
You know, and Alvin's now in New Orleans. Luke is in L.A., which just hired Brian Shaw to be his assistant today, which is kind of funny because everybody, you know, if I had to ask you, a month ago, you know, all right, these, you know, two of these guys are going to be the Knicks head coach and assistant coach, and the other two are going to be the L.A., where would your money have been?
Unbelievable. I know. I would say, yeah, we're going to get Luke Walton and Brian Shaw. I mean, that I thought was going to be what was going to happen, actually. I thought the Lakers were going to lose out. But you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. There's a part of me that feels like I'm not a fan of the narratives that some of the media make to sell papers, but man, it looks like Phil's going back to L.A. soon, doesn't it? I mean, if you were to – just based off that question, you know, like Luke Walton and Brian Shaw, they are going to be in L.A. And there's going to be a position open next year when Phil's opt out with the Knicks is available. And at the end of the day, he could look back, and if the Knicks have a successful season, he could look back and say, hey, I left the Knicks better off than when I started, but I'm going to go back to L.A. and be with my fiance and my son, Luke. I mean, how can you ignore it? I mean, You know what
well,
I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I don't concern myself with it. You know, it's ifs and buts. I go, you know, Jeannie Buss was on the radio recently. I think it was the day after Byron Scott got fired. She was on with Jay Moore, radio out in L.A., actually. And they asked her the Phil Jackson question, and she flat out said, she said, look, like that, you know, that's past. Like they had that opportunity to bring Phil back. It was, you know, had its chance and it's over. Phil's in New York. He's happy, you know, he's happy there. He's not coming back here.
Right.
So, you know, I take it from the horse's mouth. Yeah. You know? So, you know, I trust her. Anybody knows Phil, it would be her. So if anybody would think, you know, understand what Phil was thinking, it would be her. But, you know, that, if and buts when the time comes, if it doesn't even, at some point, you know, from the day Phil was brought in here, it was set up for Mills to succeed him, So, it's not, it's going to happen eventually, folks. Just be, you know, I'll tell you what's going to happen though, Sean, is that was going to be, that's going to be the time is when all this groundwork that's been laid is going to, they're going to start, so, all the benefits, let's say the flowers are going to bloom and he probably won't get, he might not get the credit he deserves for it. He might not, as I said, he might not ever get the credit for it. No, he doesn't get credit for Kristaps as he should. People acting like that wasn't a ballsy pick, you know, like, like the kid wasn't booed on draft night. And I come to imagine that if and when the Knicks do have success, there's going to be a lot of people out there saying, well, it shouldn't have taken this long. Or, you know, or what about the 2 years prior? Were they, what about the 65 losses?
Could you imagine if the Knicks would have drafted Winslow or Moody at 4 and then Orlando ended up with KP at 5? Could you imagine what Phil, the backlash Phil would have received for that?
Better yet, and I still think he's going to be a hell of an NBA player. Can you imagine if it was D'Angelo Russell? And I only say that because of D'Angelo's – I mean, who's to say D'Angelo would have filmed one of his teammates here? But
because
he was playing really well actually in the second half of last season. But you know, we talked about Jerian Grant earlier, and I wanted to bring this point up. Tell me the player that didn't struggle. Tell me the rookie point guard, or show me the rookie point guard that didn't struggle last year. You know, there were times that those players that were considered to be above, you know, Jerian Grant as prospects. You know, there were times that they played really well, but they overall everybody. Had an adjustment to make, and it's well noted that it's point guard is the hardest position to learn, you know, and it's also the hardest position to defend in today's NBA. You know, there's no mercy. Almost every team now has, you know, a competent point guard or better. So, one other note about Jerian Grant, if you look at it, you know, he was a 5-year player at Notre Dame, and I believe he redshirted a year. So you have to wonder if maybe Jerian just is a little bit of a slow learner, or it takes time for the adjustment. Everybody apply it to yourself when thinking about it. There's nothing about what I've seen with Jerian Grant other than his jump shot, which could be improved. That tells me that he's not going to have it does. So I'm saying it's not like, you know, I think he has a better jump. I think he has a better jumper than Emmanuel Mudiay. I mean, you know, so I think Jeremy's going to have a long career in this league. And where he was picked at 19th, you know, you can't really ask for anything. You know, it's a success. You know, even if he's going to be at worst, be a backup, probably a lot more.
Right. I agree. Let's wrap up with, we haven't talked much about Carmelo yet. Let's wrap up talking about Carmelo. Obviously, I heard he was back in the gym this week, back in New York. I guess he was in Cannes earlier.
Looking spelt.
In France. I know, man. So he's back in New York. He's working out, and Hornacek already went to the training facility. Carmelo must be happy in the sense that, you know what, he wanted the coaching search. The coaching search happened, and it's an offense that could be well-suited to his game. At the end of the day, I have no doubt in my mind that Carmelo Anthony wants to retire or a Knick, or at least finish off his contract this way. Do you think?
I believe. Sorry, go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, no, that being said, say the Knicks flop, trade deadline comes up, and the Knicks are, again, out of the playoff hunt, say 10 games out of the last spot. Do you think that eventually Carmelo will say, you know what, shit, I can't take this anymore, just send me somewhere else? Or do you think he's going to fulfill his contract? till the end.
I think you'd have to have a pretty much have to have a carbon. I mean, I hate like trying to get into a player's head and assume what they're thinking, but I would imagine it would take something like a carbon copy of the way last year went, you know, or worse for that, for him to be like, you know what, I just can't do it. But because from everything that comes out of his mouth, he's, you know, there's, sounds like there's nothing more that he wants than to win and to win here. So, that, and I don't know if he gets caught up in the noise. Like I said, the way the team, the way the fan base perceives the team is not necessarily the way the players perceive the team. You know, they don't look at guys and be like, oh, Jose, you suck. Like, you know, get off my team. Like, they don't look at it that way. Melo, there was a thing today that said Melo could play, and that's something I've been a Carmelo Anthony fan pretty much his whole career. Watched him play at Cuse, watched him, you know, obviously win the national championship, followed him throughout. And one thing I've said from the beginning, before that draft even happened, is, you know, Carmelo might have the longest career out of all those top prospects because his game is not predicated on athleticism. It was all about, you know, skill and skill and footwork. You know, Melo wasn't above the basket type of guy. He's an excellent post game. And for that reason, he might be the best post guy, one of the best post. I mean, he is one of the best post players, but it's arguably the best post player in the NBA. So, you know, when Melo says he wants to play 20 years, I can see it. Cause like, he's like a Paul Pierce in that sense. That his game's at. So, you know, it's all about, you know, being, you know, his shot falling and such. I think Melo's going to want to stay in New York as well, but that obviously depends on the success of the New York Knicks. But I really don't think he's going anywhere. Things would have to go backwards, maybe a regime change, you know, which I don't foresee either. So I think Melo's writing this out.
I think so, too. I mean, the way he played last year, it was his best all-around season. And it was extremely impressive, especially during the time we were playing 500 ball. It's kind of something we all knew he could do, you know, average around 4 or 5 assists and get eight boards and make big shots towards the end. I read something that Hornacek was one of the best coaches in the sense of playing his starters on average about 33 minutes a game, which is great. So he doesn't overplay his players, which is a good sign for Carmelo Anthony. I would always get frustrated watching Melo play 42 minutes a game under Fisher and Rambis. So that's a huge positive, I think, as well for Carmelo. Because, like you said, he could be a Paul Pierce player. Well, that was one of the major components of the Celtics championship run, that Paul Pierce was maybe 34 at that time. And Rondo was coming into his own, and he was only, 24 years old or something. So if Porzingis could, you know, hit his peak in 2 years when Carmelo's 34, and Carmelo could be the guy that still gets you 20 points and, you know, hits clutch shots when need be, or even if he gets 17, 18 points, that's the type of player that doesn't hurt you offensively or defensively that could play until he's, you know, over 35 years of age. So, I think that Carmelo truly wants to be a Knick and he wants to be here. And it's not just for his marketing opportunities, but I think he's one of those old school players that says, I don't necessarily want to run away from the challenge. I want to kind of soak it all in and at the end of the day be a part of the change. I'm convinced of that right now, so I don't think he's going anywhere.
I wish. He's the only player I've ever seen in New York say all the right things and not get the credit for it. Because, you know, players say that, and they, you know, regardless of championship or not, they, you know, they build statues for them here. So, they treat them like God. So, that's another thing about New York. You don't necessarily. People say that you have to win a championship to be. I mean, look at how beloved guys like Starks, Oakley, and Mason are. You know, Patrick.
Yeah.
Patrick's obviously 50 NBA's all-time greatest, but look at the other guys. You know.
Right. So, if Carmelo gets to one Finals appearance, he'll go down as one of. He's already going to go down one of the best Knicks of all time. Honestly, he would. But say the Knicks make the playoffs the next 3 years and they get to the Eastern Conference Finals once, maybe go to the Finals before he retires. Even if it's on the back of KP, Carmelo will still go down as one of the best. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, without a doubt. I mean, that's not even, I don't even think that that's in question. But yeah, and at some point, you know, everybody's, and like everybody keeps talking about, you know, they have one Melo with one foot in the grave. That's just not the reality. And I would say part of that is probably because when his injuries do happen, there's a lot of mystery around them, and we're like, wait, is Melo right? Not right. He's not playing well. After he returned, he still looks like there's something wrong with him. So you see, but you mentioned earlier about him changing the style of plays last season. That's something, whether it's Phil Jackson, whether it's Derek Fisher, I give them both credit. When you talk, they say Phil Jackson's done nothing. Phil Jackson did something that they said nobody would ever do. I mean, hasn't the knock on Carmelo Anthony be that he would never rebound, he would never defend, he would never be a team player? Not that I thought that all that was the book on him, or actually it was, you know, that was the book on him, but not to say that it was the book on him was true, but it was said that he would never change, especially 13 years into his career. Well, guess what?
Guess what?
Career highs in all those categories. And, you know, I had a certain New York beat writer. There's one day I was just praising that online, and I said that, you know, Carmelo Anthony had a great season, and a certain New York beat writer thought it was, you know, cool to DM me that. Are you kidding me? He's the Knicks record and his field goal percentage is down. And I mentioned, I said, hey, look, you know, everything, all these other categories are up. So when you look around all around play, like, he pointed to the MVP season. Absolutely. But it's different. You know what I mean? And I laugh when I think of the posting and toasting this year when they coined it Dad Melo, if you will. Well, you know, Dad Melo was good for the Knicks.
Sure. Yeah, totally. I mean, Dad Melo, he's been able to do what we needed him to do. He needed to be the focal part of the offense. He averaged 29 points a game, third in MVP voting, got us our first Atlantic Division crown in 14 years, 15 years maybe. I mean, that alone is one of the major accomplishments that a player before him could do, you know. Third in MVP voting, averaged nearly 30, and then to be Dad Melo this year and be a good mentor to KP, I mean, tremendous.
But that's also like having all your eggs in one basket, too. And I don't want to have to rely – I don't want to have to rely or ask that of, you know, a player every year, because it's not sustainable. And that's how you get yourself into trouble. And to be honest, it's the reason they got bounced out of the playoffs that year, to be honest, is Mel, you know, Kevin Garnett tore his Melo's labrum.
Yep, rotator. labrum, right.
Yep. And the Knicks had, granted the regular season doesn't mean as much as so, but the Knicks should have beat that Pacers squad, and they didn't. And, you know, they had a favorable season against Miami that year. Not to say it would have happened, but it would have been at least, you know, an interesting. It would have been saying, hey, I want to see game one and two and see what happens for the general masses. Knick games are going to watch them. Knick fans are going to watch them all. So, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You don't want to rely on one player going nuclear for your success. And that's what Carmelo Anthony was doing in March.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, in that series, Indiana ended up taking Miami to 7 in the next series. And we took him to 6. And we basically took him to 6 with Jason Kidd at, what was he, 0 for 30 or something crazy. J.R. Smith was like 2 for – I mean, it was like everybody – was cold in that series. No one could hit a shot from the outside. And they were wide open shots. I remember a play late in that game 6 where Carmelo made a beautiful, unselfish pass to J.R. Smith, wide open for a 3, and he missed it. And I think we may have been down maybe 2 or 3. And I just thought to myself, Carmelo kept on trusting the system, making the right passes, and no one could hit the open shot. Do you remember that?
And J.R. is having another infamous playoff run off the court well. So you have that. And then you have, you know, Mike Woodson got some, they got surprised in that first game that Indiana stole that first game from them. And Mike Woodson tried to play a way that they hadn't played all year by matching. I understand what he was trying to do, but he was trying to match Indiana's size. And he lost. You know, and he didn't really play guys. You know, there was guys like Marcus Camby who sat on the bench. Like, I was like, wait a second, if you're going to go big, then why is Camby not in there? Like, you're getting killed on the boards mm-hmm. every night. Like, why are certain players, you know? So, no, I think Mike Woodson did a great job here in New York, considering everything, you know, that we know about the culture of this place. But at the end of the day, not to say that it wasn't right that, you know, for him to go in the end, but those playoffs, he, you know, weren't his greatest moment here in New York.
Yeah, they definitely weren't. And who knows if Barnes was forced on him to play the four and to totally change styles the next year. I mean, I was someone that thought that Bargnani could have been fine as a backup option, playing 15, 20 minutes max as a 4-5. It would have been fine. But to put him in at power forward and to change everything that worked the year before, I can't blame Woodson for that, because that may have been an edict from up above. But
well,
that's really – I remember preseason when that happened, I knew we weren't going to be the same team.
Here are two plays to me that define that Indiana – that stand out about and define that Indiana series. One mm-hmm. is – Roy Hibbert taking – this is funny because they're both centered around Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert taking Tyson Chandler off the dribble at the top of the key and being able to do it consistently. You know,
right.
that was crazy. They're getting dribble penetration from 7 foot three Roy Hibbert. Like,
right.
So that – and then obviously I still – like, I can't speak about it without seeing Hibbert's hand push back the ball. But you know, the Melo dunk. And Melo's dunk. I mean, man, if that dunk goes down, it's up there with the dunk. You know, especially you know, being over a player. So those two plays are what stand out to me, and they kind of define why the Knicks lost that series. You talk about Bargnani. Did they want to pull? Think then. Okay, well, Hibbert was a problem down low for us, so we want to pull him away from the basket. So we go out and we get an Andrea Bargnani. You know, I don't think Andrea being on the thing has ever been explained here in New York. I was somebody who really thought it could work, and you know, when people gave him, because I believed in the talent, were giving him. Like, it becomes a point where everybody's just jumping on him. We just be like, you know what? It's just like not what you're saying it is. So I found myself being a champion for Andrea Bargnani, and that's something that, you know. They probably had me wear a scarlet. They probably would have me wear a scarlet letter for it today. But you know.
Yeah. Well, it happens. I mean, the good news is that I think that this upcoming season, we can end on this note. The Knicks will definitely be, again, very interesting, probably implementing some kind of a hybrid system. They're going to have a coach who's a hell of a smart offensive mind, and he's going to have two unique weapons of Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis to build his system around. And Jerry and Grant coming into his second year. We have a defensive anchor in Robin Lopez, and we improved from 17 wins to, 32 or 33 this past season? I'm happy next year for a 500 club, but I think it's going to start with the defensive, 32, the defensive, the defenders that we pick up, wing defenders would be nice. And obviously the coaching staff around Hornacek, and we'll go from there, but I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more. I think, what are we about 6 weeks away from the beginning of free agency? And so maybe let's get back together in a week or so after the press conference and we'll chat about the Knicks a little bit more in a couple of weeks. Sound good?
Sounds good, Sean. Sounds good, man. Thank you.
All right, Chris. Of course, man. You can follow Chris Delgado at Del Blago, DELBLOGO. You can on Twitter. You can follow me at Esquino34 at Twitter. Thank you very much for listening again. This is the first ever NYK Exchange podcast presented by NYKinformation.com. Thanks for listening. This is going to be downloadable on iTunes probably by Monday. So you guys can go to iTunes and subscribe there. Thanks for listening. Until next time, everybody, have a great night.
Peace.